Hey, it's Brother One.
And Brother Two.
From Two Brothers Mattress.
You'll spend 33% of this year on your mattress.
That's almost 3,000 hours.
Start sleeping comfortably on a new Serta mattress.
Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
With our lowest price guarantee
and our 100-night trial,
your locally owned Two Brothers Mattress is your number one choice in Serta mattresses. Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
Twobrothersmattress.com.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
So many of the headlines continue to swirl around the Middle East and around Gaza in particular, and it has touched so many different places and spaces around the world in terms of the geopolitics and also the politics right here at home. And as we look at President Biden's reelection campaign, of course, he's doing a little sprint across Pennsylvania this week as part of that. And in the meantime, a lot of the challenges that the president is going to face in that reelection bid will actually be in the Middle East and Gaza in particular. Gaza's been dividing Democrats in some very interesting and unique ways. Ronald Brownstein, of course, is the senior editor at The Atlantic, senior political analyst for CNN, one of the best in the business, and wrote a fantastic piece digging into what this really is, what it means, the challenges the Biden administration has had and the president himself has had in terms of navigating and threading the needle when it comes to Israel and Gaza. And Ronald, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So give us kind of your lay of the land in terms of how the president has approached this and some of the challenges that it's creating for him, not across the political spectrum, but really within the center of his own party.
Yeah. Well, as you said, I mean, it is a highly complex challenge from both a political and a policy standpoint. And there are no entirely safe courses of action for the president in terms of the domestic politics. But I think the kind of the summary of what we've seen is that Biden's instincts about Israel were formed in an earlier generation. Mm-hmm. And his kind of inclination, his first step, you know, as we would say of an outfielder, is always to emphasize his support for the country and his theory. When the conflict began, you remember the phrase, he was going to bear hug Netanyahu and try to influence him by staying as close as possible. The problem he's got is that his instincts are very different than the dominant view in his party today, both about Israel in general and its degree of vulnerability in the region, and particularly about Netanyahu, who has identity. You know, I've been covering national politics since the 1980s, and I don't think there is any foreign leader who has identified as closely with one of the U.S. political parties as Netanyahu has with the Republican Party over the years. Only one in 20 Democrats in polling say they have a favorable view of Netanyahu. And so the president has kind of been caught between his instinct to resist confrontation, to resist imposing conditions on Israel, and the growing unease in his party, but also in the center of the electorate among independents about the way Israel has conducted this war. He has seemed a step behind. And in terms of, you know, kind of matching where the public is going, particularly in his own party. And as a result, as I say in the story, I think he is facing more internal dissent inside the Democratic coalition over the way he's handled this than a Democratic president has faced over any foreign policy decision, really, since Vietnam.
Yeah, and I want to unpack that a little bit. But I want before I do that, I want to get the first step is such a crucial thing, and bonus points for the baseball reference. But often the president has found that first step has often ended up in a backpedal and a lot of confusing messaging in terms of saying this, but then doing that. Sometimes he feels a little more like the British Bobby, who's unarmed, yelling stop or all yell stop again. And that seems to be creating confusion both within the party, but also on the international stage in terms of what is the policy? What's the agenda? Is this a de-escalate at any cost problem? And is that creating more confusion than clarity, again, even within his own party?
Well, as we said, he is extremely reluctant to have anything approaching a fundamental breach with Israel. And he is extremely reluctant to back his words with consequences. So, you know, as we have seen, I think both as a result of political pressure in his own coalition, that's undeniable, but also because of a genuine policy reaction to the way the Netanyahu government has pursued this war and what they've said about the aftermath, he's moved toward more of a rhetorical public criticism of Israel's approach to this. But he has not married that to actual consequences. And so you have more and more, we're up to about 20 Senate Democrats, 56 House Democrats, urging him to suspend the delivery of offensive weapons until certain changes happen. Importantly, you know, no one is really calling, no one that I'm aware of, or at least that, you know, the mainstream of the party is calling for the suspension of defensive weapons like the Iron Dome that Israel employed over the weekend with Iran. Even though that distinction is pretty clear in terms of the positioning, it's a little more murky in terms of the policy. The F-15s, for example, that Israel is seeking, were also, the U.S. used F-15s to shoot down some of the incoming missiles. The Iran attack has probably pushed back this confrontation within the party to a degree. It has kind of delayed it, I think. But May 8th is a date that you should circle, because under pressure from some of those Democratic senators earlier this year, the Biden administration issued a national security memorandum that requires them to report to Congress on May 8th about whether all allies, but certainly pointedly Israel, are using U.S. weapons in accordance with international law, and whether they are cooperating with the distribution not only of U.S. aid, but international aid that the U.S. supports. And it is, you know, I think the sponsors, the senators who advanced that idea and negotiated it with the administration, think it is going to be very hard for them to certify that Israel has done so, particularly on the aid front.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, we're going to watch that May 8th very closely. Help us unpack for a second the impact on the younger voters. And again, we know it will be a close election. And this is not these people are going to, you know, switch parties and vote for former President Trump. But this is more, do people become disconnected and not show up? And in a close election in those seven battleground states, for sure, that could be the difference from between re-election and packing it up.
Yes, absolutely. And particularly, as I'll say in a moment, Michigan is a particular problem. And it is a very difficult state for Biden to replace if he can't win it. I mean, there is a way to replace it, but it's not easy. Look, young voters have never been that enthusiastic about Biden. They weren't in the 2020 primaries. They rallied to him against Trump in the 2020 election. His approval rating among them has never been great. And this provides this represents just one more hurdle that he's got to get over. In the polling, opposition to the way Israel has conducted the war and resistance to sending them more offensive weapons is as high among young people as it is among any other group. And as you say, the issue the Democratic pollsters and strategists are worried about is not so much that large numbers of them will flip over and vote for Trump, because Trump would, if anything, be even more deferential to Netanyahu. And Stephen Miller, his top immigration advisor, is openly tweeting pictures of pro-Palestinian demonstrations and saying ICE will be busy in 2025 deporting people is what he means. But the fear is that you know, when they're not that enthusiastic to begin with, that this may provide another reason at the margin for people to stay home or splinter to the many third party options they have. I also think Michigan is a particular problem, you know, where you have that large Arab American population, which is not by itself, I don't think, large enough to tip the state. But the all the protest that is centered in those communities like Dearborn just keeps this in the news more in that state. And I thought it was a worrisome for Biden straw in the wind that the University of Michigan president about 2 weeks ago felt they had to impose new unilateral restrictions on protest on campus, because the protests against the war have been so intense and widespread. If that level of activism is happening at Ann Arbor, you know, that is not a good thing for Biden, because, you know, winning Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin is the surest path for him to get back to 270 electoral college votes. If he doesn't win Michigan, he has to win either Georgia, which looks very hard, North Carolina, which looks very hard, or both Arizona and Nevada, which is probably the best option of the three, but is no guarantee either. So the Michigan problem is a concentrated version of the youth problem nationally, and it's compounded by the Arab-American problem.
Fantastic perspective, as always. Great piece. You need to go check that out at The Atlantic, theatlantic.com today. Ronald Brownstein, senior editor at The Atlantic, senior political analyst for CNN, one of the great thinkers and someone who has watched this for a long time and has great depth, insight, and wisdom in terms of what all of this means and how this will play out. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words, and have a good rest of the week.
All right. That's Ronald Brownstein again from The Atlantic. Some really fascinating perspective. And it's one of those, again, you look at just the headlines, it's the headlines. But if you get underneath the headlines, you can start to think again about what you think you know. And Ronald does that with the best of the best of them. We'll step aside for one last break. More Inside Sources coming up next.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big.